The subject that we're dealing with today is the first ikar of the Yud-Gimel Ikra. We started this last time and we talked a little bit about different kinds of faith, different kinds of doubt. Let's just recap very briefly the first principle of the Rambam. The Rambam's Yud-Gimel Ikra start with the concepts of God as the first cause. And let's just look on the first page of the last sheet of number 3, and I'll remind you what he says. He says that the first principle of faith, the existence of the Creator, is that there is an existent being invested with the highest perfection of existence. He's the cause of existence of all existent things. In Him they exist, and from Him emanates their continued existence. And then Rambam goes on to say, if God were for one second to cease to exist, nothing else would exist. But if everything in the world, in the creation, in the universe, were to cease to exist, then that wouldn't affect God's existence at all. At the end he says, whatever is outside him, the intelligences, the angels, the bodies of the spheres, the things below these, all of them need him for their existence. Everything relies on him. Every single other existence in the world is contingent, meaning that it doesn't exist in and of itself. It relies on something else for its existence. Whereas God's existence is not contingent. It is what we call necessary, meaning it doesn't rely on anything else. And he says at the end, this is the first cardinal doctrine of faith, which is indicated by the commandment, I am the Lord your God. Anochi Hashem Elokeichem, etc., etc. Now, the few things I just want to bring out from this are as follows. Number one, the Rambam's first ikkar is not just a principle of faith, but it's also a mitzvah. It's also a mitzvah. Not every one of the ikrim is a mitzvah in the Torah. In fact, most of the ikrim are not mitzvahs. But this one is a mitzvah. We'll see some of the other ones are as well. So the Rambam understands, and not everybody understands this, but the first statement in the Ten Commandments, Anochi Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hoteiti Yitzchem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, that's not just a description, that's not just an introduction, that is a mitzvah itself. And the question is, what is that mitzvah? What am I meant to be doing in order to do that mitzvah? It's not just a belief thing that this is one of the principles of faith. There's actually something I need to be actually fulfilling to do that mitzvah. Okay? So that's one thing I'd like to point out. The basic essence of the mitzvah is that God is what we call an ontological cause. Meaning, it's not, and I want to make this clear, it's not talking about God as creator of the world. This doesn't mean God was the first thing that created everything else. A lot of people make that mistake, and that's not what it means. We will see that the fourth ikkar is the belief that God is the creator, and why that's important, that the universe came from nothing. Okay? However, the first ikkar means not that God was the first thing in time, but God is, what do I mean by an ontological? Meaning that in terms of the philosophy of existence, God is needed to keep everything else in existence. Because everything has to have a cause. Everything has to have something else. The cause needs to be there. It can't just become there itself. And the first of those causes that underpins everything, again, not in time, but in reality, is this cause of God. Now, the Rambam has not proved this. The proof of what we call here the cosmological proof, which I talked about last time a little bit, this is called in Proofs of God the cosmological proof. The idea that the cosmos can't exist by itself, there must be something which gives it existence. He says the proof is based on your understanding of Aristotle. And he lists at the beginning of the second part of the Morin Avuchim. The Morin Avuchim is divided into three parts. The second part of the Morin Avuchim is the Rambam's extended cosmological proof. And he says, of course, in order to understand this, you will have read Aristotle's different philosophical proofs. And therefore, I'm not even going to try and prove it, because we won't get very far. I won't be capable of doing it. You will be interested in doing it. And therefore, I'm not trying to prove anything here. But just understand that this is where the Rambam is initially coming from. In terms of the mitzvah, have a look in source 6 on this sheet, because we didn't get to this last time. It says, HaMitzvah HaRishona, the first mitzvah in the Torah. Now, this is from the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot. The Rambam wrote the Sefer with all 613 mitzvot, and he says the following. He said, "Nitzaveinu laha'amin ha'elukut." We were commanded to believe in God's godliness. And now, this word laha'amin, don't get too excited by it, because this, of course, is not the original. This originally was in Arabic, and it was translated into Hebrew, and whether the word lahamin, imunah, is the right word here is a whole debate. I'm not going to get into that. I'll put a footnote there if you want. If you want to have copies of this, I'll copy some more afterwards if you didn't get one. But here, let's just carry on here. For hushinamin sheyesh Allah, that there is an Allah. Allah is the Hebrew word for God. in case you didn't know, not just the Islamic word for God. Allah means Elyon, the highest source, okay? V'siba, and the cause. Shehi ha'poyel l'chol ha'nimtza'im. This is the thing that gives belief, gives existence to all things. V'zehu amri ana anochi Hashem Elokeicha. I am the Lord your God. U'besoif, Gemara Machas. Now he says something new that we haven't taught that. At the end of Machas, Amru, they go, the rabbis say, Tariag mitzvahs nemru lo l'moshe b'sina. The Moshe was taught 613 mitzvahs on Sinai. Okay? How do we know? How do we know that there are 613 mitzvahs? Where do we get that number from? The answer is this Gemara. Mikra, what pasuk proves this? The pasuk here, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Torah, the Moshe commanded us the Torah. Kaloma minyan, the number, the gematria of Torah. Now, gematrias are usually the icing on the cake. We don't prove very much from gematrias. But this gematria is very central. The gematria of the word Torah is 611. Torah was taught to us by Moshe. 611 was taught to us by Moshe. So the Gemara goes on, the Rambam goes on to say, the Hikshu Alzev Amru, the rabbis are asked on this, and they said, Torah gematria hachi, who was the gematria of Torah? Shizmeo v'chatzrei, only 611. The Haisa Tshuva, and the Tshuva of this is as follows: Anuchi Hashem Elokecha, v'lo yielcha. The first two of the Aseret Dibros, I am the Lord your God, and have no other God but me. Mipiyah Gvur Shamu. The Jewish people heard these directly from God. This is quite famous. I think you've probably heard this before. Hinin is Baalachan. That's what it means. Ki Anuchi Hashem Michlal Tariyog Mitzvahs. You see from here that Anuchi is one of the 613 mitzvahs. For Hutzivu Laham in Kemo Shiviyah. Now the Rambam is interested in proving here that Anuchi Hashem Elokecha is one of the 613 mitzvahs, which you see from this Gemara it is. But it's interesting that we've seen this idea that these first two mitzvahs were given directly from God to the people, whereas the remaining 611 were taught to us through Moshe. This is a very well-known idea. Every cheder kid is taught this idea. But what does it mean? What does it mean we got these first two mitzvahs directly from God? So the Rambam says something which is extremely important and very little known. Have a look over the page in source number 7. In the Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam explains what does it mean that the Jewish people got the first two mitzvahs directly from God. He says like this. They also have a diktum formulated in several places in the Midrashim and also figuring in the Talmud. This is translated from the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim. This is their diktum. They heard I, Anochi, and you shall not have, lo yilcha, from the mouth of the force, mipia gvura. It's interesting how God is often called the force. You don't have to be a Star Wars person to use that expression, but God is called the force, the kagvura. It's an interesting idea. I don't know if George Lucas knew that. Okay, he probably did. They mean, what do they mean when they say the first two mitzvahs are given by God directly? Listen, they mean that these words reach them just as they reached Moses, our master. In other words, we heard the first two mitzvahs just the same as Moshe did, and that it was not Moses, our master, who communicated them to us. Okay, what does that mean? For these two principles, I mean the existence of the deity and his being one, are knowable by human speculation alone. Thus, these two principles are not known through prophecy alone, and as for the other commandments, they belong to the case of generated opinions, and those adopted in the virtue of tradition are not the class of the intellect. Meaning what? Meaning the Rambam is saying a really interesting thing. When Chazal say that the first two mitzvahs are given directly to the Jewish people, not through Moses, what does that mean? It means that the first two mitzvahs are intellectually and philosophically provable without revelation, without Torah. We'd never have known the mitzvah of Shabbos without Torah. We'd never known the mitzvah of Kashrus without Torah. But we would have known the mitzvah to believe in God and to understand that God is one. We would have known that if we'd have thought about it. So the Aristotle knew that, and he had no revelation. The other mitzvahs came through revelation. Now, this is not taking away from the experience they had at Har Sinai. It doesn't mean their experience at Har Sinai was an intellectual experience. They had an experience at Har Sinai was an extremely, extremely emotional experience. Har Sinai was the meeting of God and the Jewish people in some cosmic and amazing sense. And the Rambam describes, we'll have a look at it, how that meeting works. But he said he wants, at least for these purposes, for you to understand that the first two mitzvahs, and these are the first three principles of the Yom Ikrim, are independent of revelation. Every human being should be able to work these out. From Ikrim 4 onwards, they depend on revelation, on the Torah itself, but these are different. And this is something, therefore, that you do with your mind, with your head. Every human being who has a brain is capable of doing that, and we'll see why that is so important. We'll see in a minute why that is critically important, and what this mitzvah really is. Okay? Now, The Rambam is one of those people that takes the view that the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha requires us to actually think about the existence of God. It's not enough just to accept the existence of God in blind faith terms. We actually have to try and work it out. Have a look at the Chinuch. Sefer HaChinuch takes the same view in number 8. And this was a very significant view in the Rishonim. And he says the following. Let me have a volunteer, please, for number 8 to read out the box in number 8 in English, please. Yes, please.
The concept of Amunah is to fix into ourselves that this is the truth and that it is impossible to change this in any way at all.
This was the Chinuch saying Amunah is fixing in ourselves and internalizing what we already know. We will see more of that in a minute.
And if someone should be asked about it, he would respond to the questioner that he believes this in his mind and he will not be prepared to change this, even if they threaten to kill him.
This is what it means, b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha. That's the concept. Carry on.
All of this will strengthen and fix the belief in his mind, and when he brings out the matter from potential to actuality, i.e. when he fulfills with words that he is what he has decided in his mind.
Fine. So that is the basic emunah that you internalize and you believe and you understand what it is that you've committed to. But now he goes one stage further.
And if he is talented with wisdom so that his mind can understand and his eyes can take in definitive proof of and that what he believes is true, and that it is clear that there is no other truth than this, then he will have fulfilled this positive mitzvah in an optimal way.
The Hebrew is asa zu mitzvah min hamufcha. Mitzvah min hamufcha. Often you have such a thing as a mitzvah, which is you fulfill the mitzvah. But then there's the mitzvah min hamufcha, which is the ideal way of doing this mitzvah. The Sefer HaChinuch is ruling that the mitzvah of Anochi, the mitzvah of belief in God, of Emunah, is to internalize this belief that there is a cause, there is a creator. But the mitzvah min hamufcha, the ideal way of doing this mitzvah, is to actually try and work it out. It's to use your brain, to try and prove it. To try and work out the proofs of God's existence, how it works philosophically. Now, it's nothing to do with revelation. It's nothing to do with, I believe it because Moshe Rabbeinu told me. I believe it because God told me at Har Sinai. I believe it because of all those things, and I will then work on it and try and work it out in my mind. See if I can come to it. Even if you don't come to a definitive conclusion in your mind, it doesn't actually matter, because your emunah is not dependent on what you decided in your mind. Your emunah is based on the fact, on other things, that you've decided to accept this, but the working through of this in your mind is part of the mitzvah. And we'll see in the Rambam as well, is actually maybe another mitzvah working all this through your mind. Question?
Can you then say that instead of there's 6:11, for example, that you said, can you just say that there are two little mitzvot and that all the positive ones go in the first category and all the negative?
Yeah, there is an element of truth to that, which is that in a sense that they derive the ultimate, the key positive and the key negative mitzvah, and everything else flows from there.
But it doesn't really flow from,
except it doesn't flow from there intellectually, because you'd never know the mitzvah of Shatnas, that you're not allowed to wear wool and linen, just from knowing that, you know, belief in God. You need revelation to get you to the next stage. There is a concept that the entire Torah can be worked out through from the Ten Commandments. That is true as well. Rav Sadugon talks about this at length. But essentially what you're saying, and I think there's definitely an element of truth there. Rabbeinu Bachya, since you did so nicely, you'll do another 10 please as well. Rabbeinu Bachya was also from this same school. Rabbeinu Bachya, who wrote the Chovos HaLevavot. By the way, a little heads up. There were two people in the Rishonim called Rabbeinu Bachya. And people often get this confused. That's why Rabbeinu Bachya, the earlier one who wrote the Chovos HaLevavot, lived in Spain. He lived in the 11th century. And then 200 years later, there was a Rabbeinu Bachya that lived in Israel, okay, who wrote a commentary on the Torah. That's why Rabbeinu Bachya's commentary on the Torah sometimes quotes Rabbeinu Bachya. And people think, what? He's quoting himself? The answer is no, the two guys saw that. I've heard rabbis make this mistake. There are two Rabbeinu Bachya. So I'm giving you that now as information free. That comes free with this lesson, in case you ever need it. And one day you'll know that, and you'll think of me, and you'll thank me. Okay? Thank you. Now go, let's go. Number 10. Go.
It is one's duty to investigate God's unity intellectually.
In other words, he says there's a chiyuv. This is called Hakira. Hakira means intellectual investigation of God. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, there is a chiyuv to do that. It's not just like the Chinuch said, it's the nice way of, it's the best way of doing the mitzvah. He's telling you, you're obligated. Carry on.
I say that whoever is capable of investigating through reason, this and other matters that can be understood by the intellect, is obligated to do so according to his understanding and powers of perception. Whoever neglects to investigate the subject conducts himself disgracefully.
A strong word, okay? He said it's really not on if you don't use your head.
And is counted among those who fall short in both knowledge and practice. He resembles a sick person who is himself an expert on the particular illness that he has, and yet who relies for his cure on someone else, a physician who treats him with several different remedies. Out of sheer laziness, he never makes use of his own knowledge. The Torah has obligated us in the verse, know it today and reflect on it in your heart, Hashem's God.
He says, if you're a doctor and you know how to cure yourself, but you say, you know something, why should I cure myself? Other people, I'm not my own doctor. And you get sick because you have the ability to cure yourself and you don't do it. So, well, I mean, what kind of idiocy is that? That's ridiculous. If you know how to do it, then do it. So he says the same thing. You don't just believe in God because somebody else told you to believe in God. If you know how to work through the ideas in your own mind, says the Rabbeinu Bachya, says the Chinuch, and says the Rambam, you have an obligation to do that. You have an obligation to do that. Now, not everybody agrees with this. Not everybody. Some of the later authorities were much more into the idea of emuna pshuta, of a blind faith or straightforward faith or simple faith. But I'm showing you, because we're learning the Rambam, that the Rambam's world, very much the world of the Spanish rationalists, was a world which this wasn't really the world that they were coming from. If you had a brain, then you have an obligation to use your brain. Okay? We tend to live in a world now where everything is a chok. I see this a lot with students that I teach from, that come up in, you know, from high schools. Everything's a chok. You know what I mean by a chok? It's a rule that God says and we don't understand nothing. We don't understand anything. Now, of course, on a certain level, everything is a chok. Like, how can you possibly understand the mind of God? And we'll see, the Rambam doesn't think for 1 minute you can actually understand what God really is. Of course, you can't really understand that. But nevertheless, once you start categorizing everything as a chok, then nothing really makes any sense, then it almost relieves you of the responsibility to try and make sense of anything. It just becomes almost an excuse to avoid using our intellectual powers and just say, well, I just believe it because someone told me so. The Rambam's not interested in that. The Rambam wants you to use your head, as we saw with the Chinuch Rabbeinu Bachya. There are other approaches, but we're learning the Rambam. One of the things, the routes I'm going to take in the Yud Gimel Ikrim, is we could spend hours and hours talking about what everybody else says about the Yud Gimel Ikrim, but I'm not going to do that because we'll never get anything done. Already it's the middle of November and we're still on the first Ikkah, okay, which is incredible. But nevertheless, from here on we're making sterling progress, which we're going to do right now because we're going to look at sort of sheet number 4 straight away. Yes, Aviva.
Couldn't you also say that, like, with your way, like, you get a little bit too intense on the intellect and then eventually come to say, oh, well, I thought of this, so I'm God, Hashem.
Okay, you're right. Intellect, you know, can breed.
It has to be a balance.
Yes, of course it has to be a balance. You have to have humility. Intellect does not preclude humility. Intellect will sometimes lead you to a conclusion, I don't know. I can't know, maybe. But that's also using your intellect. Coming to the conclusion, I don't know and I can't know, is an intellectual conclusion as opposed to, I'm not interested in finding out whether I can know, which is unintellectual. Okay? Remember on Seder night, this is a little bit of drush for you, on Seder night, there's the Chacham, there's the Rosha, there's the Tam, and the She'en de Elisha. So the Chacham and the Taz, the Rosha and the Einad Elishol get a very similar answer.
Here are the four sons.
Yeah, the four sons, yeah? And one of the reasons for that is you've got two intellectuals and two non-intellectuals. So there are different responses to intellectuals and non-intellectuals, but the Einad Elishol is a non-intellectual who's not interested in even trying to use his intellect. In other words, everybody has some intellect. The Tam even has enough intellect to say, Mazot. Mazot. What do you mean you're Eino lo yodea lishol? You're not able to ask a question. How ridiculous is that? Who can't ask a question? Who is not able to say mazot? If you're not asking a question, there's usually one reason, which is that you're just not interested in asking a question. That's why we give the Eino yodea lishol a hard time. It's not like he's a 3-year-old kid. Why would you even have an answer for a 3-year-old kid? He's obviously an intellectual human being, and yet he's not interested in using his brain at all. That's why the Eino yodea lishol gets a hard press and gets a similar answer to the Rosha. Anyway, you can remember that for Seder night next year. Fine, let's go. We will. I'm going to skip through this because we do have to finish at 6:10. I've got 25 minutes, and again, I'm sorry for being a little bit late beginning, but we have to do what we can do. Now, just two words on a couple of things. We talked last time quite a lot about Emunah and Yediyah. I may come back to that if I have time at the end, which I won't. But let me just say another thing here first. Turn to page 3 for a second. While we're on the topic of philosophical proof, look at this piece from the Moreh Nevuchim. The Rambam got into a lot of hot water because people said, you know, Judaism's not about philosophy. Why do you need to be a philosopher? philosophy has, you know, taken people off the derech. It's led people away from Judaism. And the Rambam fought back a little bit at this and said, look, it's not true. He says the reason that people are not philosophical today is not because Judaism is not philosophical, is that people have forgotten how to be philosophical. Look at what he says in number 11 here. This is a quote from the Morin Vuchim. It says like this. No, many sciences devoted to establishing the truth regarding these matters that exist in our religious community have perished. In other words, we've lost many skills. Because of the length of time that has passed, because of our being dominated by pagan nations, because of we've been clear, it's not permitted to divulge these matters to all people. We've lost certain skills because of dollars, because of exile, because we've just dumbed down, and we've lost the ability to teach these things to people. You already know that even the legalistic science of law was not put down in writing in the olden times. He's talking about oral law, was not written down, etc. He says, therefore, things have got lost. And now he wants to say that one of those is philosophy. Have a look here, down about 15 lines down. The first line of the word of the line is now. You with me? Now, if there was insistence that the legalistic science of the law should not, in view of the harm that would be caused by such a proceeding, perpetuated in written compilation, it's a bit of a complicated English, I'm sorry. In other words, if already when it comes to halacha they said don't write it down, all the more could none of the mysteries of the Torah be set down in writing and be made accessible to the people. It says not just halacha, but there were mysteries. What we call Ma'aseh Breishit, a Ma'aseh Merkava, which in certain people's views means the Kabbalistic or mystical mysteries of the Torah, but in the Rambam's understanding of Ma'aseh Breishit, a Ma'aseh Merkava, means physics and metaphysics. When we use these expressions, Ma'aseh Merkava, whereas the Kabbalists later use that expression to mean the deep Kabbalistic secrets of the world, the Rambam uses the expression Ma'aseh Merkava, not to mean deep Kabbalistic mystical secrets, but deep philosophical understanding of Torah. That's Ma'aseh Merkava. And they disagreed with the Rambam on that, some people. But that's what he says. These certainly weren't put in writing. On the contrary, they were transmitted by a few men belonging to the elite, to a few of the same kind. Just as I've made clear to you from their saying, the mysteries of the Torah may only be transmitted to a counselor, wise in crafts, and so on. This was the cause that necessitated the disappearance of these great roots of knowledge from the nation. In other words, philosophy's gone. What can I tell you? It disappeared. We had it, and we've lost it. For you will not find with regard to them anything. There's no philosophy left, except slight indications and pointers occurring in the Talmud and the Midrashim. So you want to see Jewish philosophy? Learn Midrash. Not learn Midrash like people learn Midrash today, which is like most people learn it as a mental age of a 6 or 7 year old if they're lucky. But learn Midrash in a sophisticated way, and that's the deep secrets of Jewish philosophy. These are, as it were, a few grains belonging to the core, which are overlaid by many layers of rind. A Midrash is a little gem surrounded by layers and layers of peel, okay? So the people were occupied with the layers of rind and thought that beneath them there was no core whatsoever. It's true, it hasn't changed. So he says, don't tell me that Judaism was not philosophical. It was philosophical. It's just that we lost it. And we stopped being philosophical. And he's trying to put that right, writing the Morin Avuchim, writing the Yud Gimel Ikrim. Again, the Yud Gimel Ikrim, the beginning of the Yud Gimel Ikrim, the learning here is the obligation to philosophize on the existence of God. To understand and to think through the fact that there has to be a first cause, why does that need to be, how does that work, that is fundamental to every Jewish person. Now, now that the Jewish people have accepted the Yud Gimel Ikrim, one of the ironies, and I mentioned this before, of the Yud Gimel Ikrim, is that most, if not every frum person that you meet, if you ask them, do you believe in the Yud Gimel Ikrim, they'll all say, absolutely. But then when you ask them, do you know what the Rambam actually said in the Yud Gimel Ikrim, many of those people will say, not really. They'll start talking about animamin or this and that, which is not what the Rambam said at all. The first of the Yud Gimel Ikrim, the Rambam said, is an obligation to think and philosophize about the existence of God. And let me tell you why that's so important. Look at source number 12. Everybody knows that human beings are a tzelem Elokim. Okay? V'yom Elokim, na'aseh adam b'tzalmeinu u'kid musayinu. God created you, a tzelem Elokim. What does it mean that you are a tzelem Elokim? Meira?
Sorry, I have a question about the first part, the like
in
your brain, both
options. Yes.
Is that like an obligation for both men and women?
Yes. There's nothing in the slightest gender specific in this. The first ikar is absolutely the obligation that is only incumbent on men is the technical obligation of limatim otamis b'nei, nothing to do with this whatsoever. This is an obligation on everybody. Okay, you are just as much a Tzelem Elokim as I am, hopefully, and therefore, since everyone is a Tzelem Elokim, we'll see how this works. Now, number 30. The very beginning of the Mor Nevuchim asks, what does it mean to be a Tzelem Elokim? Obviously, God has no physical being. So what does it mean? You are a Tzelem. A Tzelem means a picture or an image of God. In what way are you an image of God? So he says like this. Some have been of the opinion that by the Hebrew Tzelem, the shape and figure of a thing is to be understood. And this explanation has led men to believe in the corporeality of the divine being. It says, the Rambam says, I know that there are people that think that God has physical form, and they use this as a proof. Look at me, I look like a being, I look like God, therefore God looks like me. Okay? You only have to look at other religions to see this in their places of worship very clearly. There are images of God that look like people. Okay? For they thought that the words, let us make man in our tzelem, imply that God has the form of a human being. In this chapter, it is our sole intention to explain the meaning of the word tzelem and demot. So this is what he says. I hold that the Hebrew equivalent to form, a physical form, is to'ar. There's a word to'ar in Hebrew. He says that's what physical form means. Well, that word means physical form. This term is not at all applicable to God. The term tzelem, on the other hand, signifies the specific form, that which constitutes the essence of the thing. The tzelem alakim, tzelem means the essence of the thing, whereby the thing is what it is, the reality of the thing, insofar as it is that particular being. In the phrase, let us make man in our tzelem, the term signifies the specific form of man, the essence of man, i.e. his intellectual perception, and does not refer to his figure or shape. In other words, the first thing the Rambam says is, the tzelem elokim is your ability to intellectualize. Carry on.
Is that the
sechel? That's sechel, correct. Have a look on top of page 4. As man's distinction consists in a property which no other creature on earth possesses, i.e. his intellectual perception, no other creature on earth has intellectualization or intellectual ability, in the exercise of which he does not employ senses, you don't use any of your senses, or move his hands or feet, this is done totally in your head, this perception has been compared, though only apparently not in truth, to the divine perception, which also requires no corporeal organ. On this account, on account of the divine intellect with which man has been endowed, he is said to be made in the form and likeness of the Almighty. But far from it be the notion that the supreme being is corporeal. Meaning, God thinks, you think. In the same way, as Rama is going to show now, actually very similarly, although not the same exactly way that God thinks, you also think. Therefore, when you are thinking, you are exercising a godly quality that no other being in the world has. It can't think. That's your tzelem elokim. Just one second. And then in number 14, then I'll take some questions, is like this. He says, how does God think? What does it mean when we say that God thinks? So later in Mor Nevuchim, he says like this. Now, when it is demonstrated that God is an intellect in action, God is an active intellect, constantly intellecting, that's the word, and that there is absolutely no potentiality in him. God is not something which is going to be something. God is. He cannot be potential. He is actual. So that he is not by way of sometimes apprehending, sometimes not apprehending. God sometimes, you can't say about God, well, sometimes he's thinking, sometimes he's not thinking. He's just kind of, I don't know, chilling, you know, phasing out, whatever they get, you know, spacing out. But he's always an intellect in actu. It follows necessarily that he and the thing apprehended are one, which is his essence. And therefore he goes into the whole analysis here, which he also deals with in the Mishnah Torah. Moreover, the act of apprehension, owing to which he is said to be an intellectually cognizing subject, is itself the intellect, which is his essence. He says like this. The wording is often more complicated than it really is. He says like this. God's intellect is the following. The thinker, the thing being thought about, and the act of thinking are all one. They're all part of God. They're all the way that God thinks. And we'll get to this when we get to the later Ikrim, where he deals with the issue of freedom of choice and God's knowledge, and he asks the $64,000 question, how can you have free choice to choose what to do when God knows what you're about to do? And the answer he gives to this question is this answer. We'll have to see that answer more clearly when we get there, which is, you don't know what it means to think. When you think about thinking, that's not what God's thinking is. God's thinking is the thinker, the thought, and the thing being thought about is all one thing. We'll explain what that is later. But for now, I want you to show you the following. He says like this. It is accordingly also clear, and this is the key thing, that this does not hold good with reference to the Creator alone, only, but also with reference to every intellect. Thus in you too, in us too, he says, the intellectually cognizing subject, the intellect, and the intellectually cognized object are one and the same thing, whenever we have an intellect in action. In other words, if you choose to actually think, then you also think like God thinks. Meaning, the thinker, the thing being thought about, and the process of thinking, all become one in you too. You think, he says, like God thinks. And since the way that God thinks is the way that God is, he says that elsewhere, that's what makes you Tzelem Elokim, when you think like God. The difference between you and God, he says, we, however, pass intellectually from potentiality to actuality only from time to time. Meaning, sometimes we think, but sometimes we space out. Sometimes we sleep. Sometimes we sit in the bathroom, but we're not meant to be being a Tzelem Elokim. Yeah? There are aspects of our life which are switched off. That's the difference between us and God. But when we're switched on, we are actively intellectualizing like God actively intellectualizes. And in that sense, we are imitating God. We are being like God. That's why it's a mitzvah. This is coming full circle. To think about God and God's existence and whether God exists and how God exists and how we know God exists. Because when you're doing that thinking, you are being like God. And that itself is a mitzvah. In fact, it's two mitzvahs. The mitzvah of the halachta b'dracha, there is the mitzvah to copy God, copy God's midot, just as God is, does chesed, you do chesed, etc. Similarly here, just as God thinks, is only thinking, you must also think. So you're actually doing the mitzvah of imitating God when you think. And also the mitzvah of the ahavta es Hashem Elokecha. Have a look here in source number 16, and then I'll take some questions. How do you get to love God? Which is another mitzvah. How do you get to love God? You can only get to love God unless you focus on God in an appropriate way. You can't love God in the way that you love your husband. The truth is you can actually, because the way that you love your husband is also to think and to have a meeting of minds with your partner. That's true love. Okay, when it says that Adam knew his wife, he knew her, meaning he had the ultimate intimacy with her, which is his knowledge. With God, of course, there can be no physical intimacy. The next best thing, or even better thing than physical intimacy, actually, much better, is intellectual intimacy. The yaz of kol mashe be'olam chutz menu, you reject everything in the world, and you just think about God. That's what it means when you say in the Shema, you have to be a haftai, Hashem Elokecha, b'chol levavcha, with all of your mind. It directs all of your mind to God. And look at what he's put here. I put it in bold. The only way you can love God is by the knowledge that you have of God. The more you know God, the more you love him. If you love him a little, if you know him a little bit, you love him a little bit. If you know him a lot, you love him a lot. So think about this, guys. When you actively think about God, you're doing three mitzvahs according to the Rambam. You're doing the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am the Lord your God. This is a mitzvah to understand God's existence. I'm actually understanding it and thinking about it. I'm doing the mitzvah of copying God by actively thinking the way God actively thinks, the way I normally don't or often don't, but now I am. And I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of loving God through knowing God, because that's the only way I can come to love God, is through knowing God. For all of these reasons, if for no other reason, the Rambam says you've got to use your head. You've got to think. The worst crime you can possibly do is not using your brain. Because that's the thing that makes you human. What, you spend your whole life using your hands and your feet and your mouth and your internal digestive organs and you never use your brain? So the Rambam, that's why you have to use your brain. That's why the first ikka is the first ikka, for all of these reasons. Yes?
Could you just reiterate that really quickly, that actively thinking about God, so it's a mitzvah because you're copying God by actively thinking.
Right.
You're loving God by knowing God.
Right. And you're fulfilling the first one, which is the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, which is the mitzvah to believe in God. But the mitzvah to believe in God is not just to, yeah, I believe in God. I believe in God. The mitzvah is to understand God, to know that there's a first cause. That's why we're coming in here. The first ikka is the same as the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, which is to understand what it means that there is a God. understand the proofs of God's existence. It's not just good enough to say, yeah, fine, Rabbi, you've convinced me I believe in God. Right, let's move on, let's learn about Shabbos. Of course, you've got to do that too. But he says, don't just think it's such a simple thing to believe in God. Belief in God itself is a whole raft of mitzvahs that demand you to use your brain. And in a sense, the conclusion that you come to is not the relevant issue here. If you're left after an afternoon of thinking about the proofs of God, if you're left still thinking, I don't know, I haven't actually proved to myself that God exists. Okay, so maybe tomorrow you will, maybe next year you will, maybe the year after you will, but at least you've been using your head. At least you've been grappling with the issues, which is what the Jew must do. So the first mitzvah of every Jew is to use their head. That should be the most important thing you communicate to every kid in high school. The most important thing as a Jew is to think about life. The truth is, the halachic system, one of the reasons why the halachic system is so detailed, that every single movement that you take and thing that you do is halachically kind of involved, is that you spend your entire life thinking. Someone came up to me the other day and said, they'd read something in the book and said, when you wash your hands, do you really pick up the keli with your right hand, put it in your left hand, then pour it over your right hand? Do you really do that? The answer is, yeah. I said, actually, said to him, I probably don't think about it anymore, which is really wrong. It's really, I should be thinking I'm doing this and that. Think how much thinking you do. And by the way, if thinking is being human, think of how much more alive thinking people are than non-thinking people. And think of how much people in the everyday life just do on autopilot. Ask them, well, why do they do anything? They just say, I don't know, why do we just do it? What are you asking me? I mean, why do you eat? What are you talking about? Why are you going to cinema? What are you talking about? Why do you go to a party on New Year's Eve? It's a great one. Ask people why they're going out on New Year's Eve. I don't know, that's what people do. What's the matter with you? Like, but why? Leave me alone, you know? Just think, if you have a good reason, then go! But if you have no reason, why are you doing it? Yes, Mary.
So I understand like the broad thing that you ask these questions, but like when you say halacha is governed by like all these minute details, so the Hebrew meaning, but what does that mean to have someone who's not, like, what is occupying your mind?
That's why in the third part of the Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam goes through the mitzvahs one by one and gives you rational understandings of the mitzvahs. So you can do each mitzvah, and not just do a mitzvah, but understand something and think of something as you're doing it. The Rambam clearly says that if you do a mitzvah without thinking about the mitzvah, you don't get Olam Haba for the mitzvah. That's why he has to give you a whole raft of understandings. If I do this mitzvah for this, I do this mitzvah for this, I do that mitzvah for that. That's the Rambam's approach. Of course, if you decide, well, I don't understand the mitzvah, the reason, you're not going to turn around and say, well, then I won't do the mitzvah. Okay, the answer is to do the mitzvah, and then maybe you'll understand better next year.
You shouldn't
what?
You shouldn't.
No, because that's arrogant. That's like saying that even though God told me to do the mitzvah, and God's intellectual process is vastly superior to mine, and logically must be, okay, if I don't understand what's going through God's mind, then I'm not going to agree with him. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's not logical. If God gave me this mitzvah and God thinks it's the right thing for me, then of course I'm going to do it. That's not even a question. The question is, am I going to do it just on autopilot, which means I'm not really doing it, or am I going to do it and try and think about it? But I'm certainly not going to think and then decide I'm not going to do it, because that makes no sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I mean, Yetzirah, sure. Yetzirah is going to tell us, if you don't understand it, what's the point of doing it? Yetzirah. Yeah.
So I have a question. So why is this the ultimate if this implies that you're kind of anthropomorphizing God, whereas maybe even closer one is creation, because ultimately it's done by our ability to create, the only difference being that we create from something and God creates from nothing.
Are we? I mean, animals also create. They reproduce. They produce little animals, but they're not Tzelem Elokim.
But we create, not only create life, we also create ideas. We also create all sorts of things.
Okay, but also monkeys make tools and they peel bananas and things. There's going to come a point when, I agree with you, there's going to come a point where you're going to say we create things through using our mind in order to create them, and then you come back again to full circle. So that's right.
Language.
Okay, but it's not just about language. Man creates what man creates through a process of understanding the way the universe works, which also is a mitzvah, by the way, of Avas Hashem for the Rambam. In other words, if you create a nuclear power station, which only human beings could do, You came to that ability through understanding the way the nuclear physics works, which itself is a way of understanding reality, which is itself a telemet of kin. So yes, man does create, but we create through our heads, ultimately. It's all brain power. You know? Yeah, sure. Without the brains, we wouldn't be able to create. I was thinking this at the zoo. I went to the zoo with my son in Europe, and there were all these baboons doing, you know, fighting with each other, and they were, you know, trying to pushing each other around and doing all this stuff. And I was thinking to myself, the place is full. This whole baboon enclosure is full of weapons or potential weapons. There are stones and there are sharp sticks and there are all sorts of things. If only one of these baboons had the intellectual ability to work out that he could create a weapon, that would be it. He would be the head of all the baboons. But they can't. They can't. They won't. And therefore they're still, like, millions of years later doing the same baboon pushing around that they were millions of years ago. And they're baboons. Now, of course, man's creation of weapons is not necessarily always a positive thing. Sometimes it's necessary. But it ultimately comes from brains. The guys on the battlefield wouldn't be anywhere without the brains working back in the intelligence and creating the systems. That's ultimately a Tzelem Elokim as well, sometimes misused, but that's also a Tzelem Elokim. Yes, Aviva.
Okay, so sorry. So in Hebrew, the first one is Ani Hashem Elokecha.
Yes.
The second one is Ve'ahavta.
Yeah, and the third one is Ve'halachta B'drachav. There is a mitzvah to copy God. It's a Torah mitzvah to copy God. Usually we apply this mitzvah to chesed. Why do you do chesed? So there's two mitzvahs of chesed. One is Ve'ahavta L'recha Kamocha. You do it because you feel, you know, compassion for other people, because you want to help them, because you'd want to be helped if you were them. But you also do Ve'halachta B'drachav. You do it to copy God. Just we see God does chesed for the world. God gives constantly to the world. So you should also be a giver. So the Rambam is saying the same thing, but in terms of thinking. Of course, chesed, he agrees. He's going to come to that as well. But just in terms of thinking, that's where it is. I think this, in and of itself, is enough to get this first point across. Yeah?
So if you are looking at something that's secular, like if you're reading a secular book or whatever, and you're thinking about it, are you making that thing like a Jewish act you're doing in this?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
So technically, you could never be with the Torah because you're always like doing the
mitzvah. Oh, that's a very interesting point you're making. Now, obviously, there's secular books and there's secular books. You could be reading a load of nonsense. And it's obviously not Tzelem Elokim at all. It's just recreation. It's like mind candy or whatever you might call it. So you're then making an interesting point. Logically, according to the Rambam, if you're reading something that's real and that's helping you to grow and understand the world and the nature and things, you're also exercising your active intellect. And that is itself a mitzvah. Rabbi Norman Lamb wrote a very interesting book called Torah Umada, where he seeks to try and define what it is that is the Torah Umada logo, the slogan, the description of the modern Orthodox world, or what they now call the centrist Orthodox world, the YU, Yeshiva University, Torah Umada, Stern College, Torah Umada. And he has a whole book, Torah Umada. I actually have a shiur in it, which I'll give Be'ezras Hashem on Tuesday afternoon, eventually this year. And he says, in theory, in principle, you should be able to make the same Birkas HaTorah, a bracha, on learning Shakespeare, or on learning a piece of secular thought, as you are on learning a piece of Gemara. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. Now, he's not saying you should make a bracha, but he's saying you should feel, if you really internalize Torah Umada, that doing this is no less of a mitzvah than learning a daf Gemara. Now, that's a controversial statement. And we need to read Rabbi Lamb in the original, and read what he actually says, not what I paraphrase, because it's not fair for me to paraphrase him. And he goes on to say that, of course, Torah is the senior partner, and it's not, I'm not suggesting that it's, you know, you should, but you know, you speak to Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein about the importance of reading English literature, and where that fits into building a Tzelem Elokim. You'll get some very interesting answers. Yes?
How can it be a mitzvah for a to understand God by like learning to understand the mitzvahs when until like was it 100 years ago women really didn't know much about the mitzvahs?
So you're asking, women didn't know much about anything intellectual because women had no intellectual training. So you're asking a good question. But you can ask that question about anybody, which is if you don't intellectually train somebody, then they can't do this mitzvah. So for generations they didn't intellectually train women. And they couldn't do this mitzvah. Now, the Rambam was not at the forefront of a campaign trying to intellectually train women, I can assure you. Okay, he didn't think he would be successful, and he writes as such. On the other hand, the times have changed. It used to be the case that there was no mass education for women. It just wasn't the role of women in society to spend their time intellectualizing, because the world was a totally different place. The whole nature of a woman's life was entirely different in many ways 100 years ago, 300 years ago, 1,000 years ago. Now women are educated, they have careers, they have their own independent spheres of intellectual influence, and therefore the times have changed. I don't know what the Rambam would say if he came back today. I really don't know. But there's one thing for sure. Rav Soloveitchik says that the mitzvah, the ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, which is incumbent on men and women, through coming to know God, through learning and intellectualizing, is now applicable 100% on women as well. And therefore, why they never did it this way could be just a product of the fact that, look, it wasn't this way, because it wasn't this way, that's just the way it was.
And would you say that he wasn't originally writing for women then, or about women?
Who?
The Rambam.
The Rambam is not writing about women or men. The Rambam is writing about people who use their brains or don't use their brains. If you're a woman who uses your brain, you use your brain. If you're a man who doesn't use your brain, you don't use your brain. The same Gemara, by the way, that says, that daf there in Sota, that it's dangerous to teach women Torah if they're going to misunderstand and misuse it. The same daf Gemara says it's dangerous to teach men Torah if they're going to misunderstand and use it. It's not a men-women thing. It just happened to be then that most women were unable to intellectualize properly, therefore there was more of a chance they were going to misunderstand it. But most men had more advanced training. But if that's not the case, that's not the case. It's really not gender specific. The gender follows just from the reality of the gender issues. The principal issues transcend the gender. Okay? Let's leave it there, because I think we've achieved great things in 45 minutes. There's Rav Hashem.